It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Yeah, welcome back to Declare Your Independence. Me, Ernest Hancock, here in Valley Forge, Pennsylvania. We're at the Liberty Conference here, put on by Tom DeWeese, and it's well attended. Got a lot of people here at the 2010 Freedom Action Conference, is what it's called, and we have a lot of good information that's being relayed to people that can use it, and that's what really happens. A lot of these conferences is people that have a lot of things to share. They need to meet up with the people that know how to share it. And a lot of times, like Gary Franchi and George Shepard with Republic Magazine and RealityReport.tv, Gary does, they just have a wealth of information. RestoreTheRepublic.com, you get hold of Gary's organization, and it was built up around Aaron Russo's America from Freedom to Fascism. And when Aaron passed away, all of that energy, the information in the database was carried forward by Gary and George, and they were sharing with the audience on how they do that and how they use a lot of the tools on the internet. And I am so getting a repeat of that DVD so I can rip it off. Now we just keep doing, you know, we got a lot of stuff we do, but there's a lot of other things that can be done, and we definitely want to do that. Well, one of the people that wants to be able to share information and has an opinion about things, Dr. Jeff Merengel, is a speaker here. I'm going to let him introduce himself, but he has an interest in something that we have had great interest in Arizona, was forced vaccinations. And how did you get into this? What was your motivation for being involved? You got to hold up real close.
Well, Ernest, I've been a practicing chiropractor and certified clinical nutritionist for about 27 years now. And over the years, we've just seen more and more individuals with chronic problems that are caused by what we call iatrogenic or medically caused incidents. One of the first things I do whenever I review a case is to look at what medicines people are on and go to the PDR, physician's desk reference, and take their laundry list of symptoms and see how many of them could possibly be from side effects of the drugs they're taking. But the thing that's concerned me most over the last few years is seeing more and more critically ill children and young adults. And some of these kids are definitely vaccine damaged. They have adverse reactions to the multitude of vaccines that are promulgated today. And it's become a great concern. And more parents are facing the loss of freedom of choice to vaccinate or not vaccinate or change the schedule of the vaccinations. When you and I were young, I believe I only had one or two vaccinations. I had the measles, I had the mumps, I had the chicken pox. We got them naturally, we got over them, and we were fine. Today, a child before he's 2 years old should have 24 different vaccinations, some of them given in 6 and 8 doses of different things on the same day, just for the convenience of the doctors. And it's causing, in many cases, severe immunocompromise and almost always some neurological deficit.
Well, let me ask this. I have 4 children. They were born in the late 80s, mid-late 80s, from 85 to 89, around in there. Now, there was a lot of things, of course. We were young, dumb parents, you know, didn't have an internet, didn't know any better. And there was a lot of things required by the schools when you go and do it. But it's not the same as, I mean, it was a lot. And once you look back at all the stuff they did, I'm going, dang. Then those children start having my second grandchild coming later this month. When we had our first granddaughter, it was pretty much decided by everyone, no, we're not doing any. So we did none. In fact, my daughter-in-law, her mother is a birthing nurse at the hospital that she was at having the baby. Well, when they put that sheet of paper in front of them, it's a clipboard, while they are in contractions, they are on the bed in contractions, making funny faces with the table put over them, sign here. Yeah, whatever, you know, you just start signing. And we were, but refused. They took pictures of the pages. They posted up the JPEG to their Facebooks. I mean, you know, they're just like, oh, heck no. So the thing is that they have another generation now that is making the decision not to vaccinate. Well, I have to wonder from the list of things that even in from my age to then my children to now their children, the number of things has increased exponentially. I mean, it's dozens and dozens, and they're done all at one time, and they're done before they're even 2 years old. So I'm going, there has to have been some type of an understanding how damaging that was. In fact, there's been cases, you know, that's brought forth to what we find now. They got vaccine court, okay? And I had, you know, just recently we had where they had they were saying autism was caused by the mercury. And so they go, well, vaccine court has determined, no, it didn't do it. Vaccine court? Where the heck did we get this vaccine court thing? Where'd that come from? So it's kind of an administrative level they want you to go through before you can even qualify to go to a real court. And I mean, as time went on, just in the last few years, I'm so scared because I can understand that none of this is done for any net medical benefit for the children, certainly not a generation. It's a money thing. There's somebody's making cash on this, or somebody's benefiting from dumbing down the population or making them sick or something, or a pharmaceutical industry and all the cures they're going to have, or how much money you're going to make by all the people coming to you for help or something. I'm going, so let's just assume that what you're finding out is, if not planned for, certainly starting to become known that it's causing more problems than it's solving. Who is behind it continuing? Why are we seeing this? Who benefits? What's going on?
Well, in doing my research for my talk here, I started going back into the history of the Public Health Service and what originally started as Health and Human Services and dealing with things like the 1914 flu and later on the polio epidemic, et cetera, before vaccines were even developed. And we all know what the road to hell is paved with, good intentions. And at some point in time, there were good intentions to prevent the spread of disease, limit mortality and morbidity in the population and so forth. However, as each coming crisis occurred, there became more and more government involvement in the enforcement of a particular thought of medical philosophy and the creation of more and more power to individuals who were strictly bureaucrats, such as, Children's Services. As recently as last week, I had a young boy, 13 years old, who was diagnosed a year ago with Crohn's disease medically. It, after further investigation and further diagnostics, it turned out that he had a microbial infection that was resolved, and we resolved it naturally and with the help of another physician. He was supposed to be taking a medication, which his mother, who is a nurse, did not administer to him after he started feeling better with the protocols that I was doing in concert with another physician. And he's gained 11 pounds, 2 inches in height over the year. And she's only seen this gastroenterologist twice since then. And she told him 6 months ago she suspended the med. The boy is healthier, stronger. There's no medical necessity. He's not in harm's way. And at this visit, the doctor informed her that she was a poor mother and not a very good representative of the nursing profession, and that it was well within his purview to contact the Children's Services in the state of Pennsylvania and maybe have this treatment enforced upon this child. But he said he wasn't going to do that.
Nice guy.
So we referred her to another gastroenterologist who is not necessarily sympathetic to alternative integrative care, but who was more open to the fact that the child was now healthy and and looking at his real medical records and seeing that he was not dealing with a year-old diagnosis, but with a resolved condition in a healthy young boy.
Oh, we don't want him healthy. We can't make money off of him. You know, this is of interest to me. You know, I have another grandchild coming, and we're going to take...
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Bring in our chief medical correspondent, Dr. Sanjay Gupta. Sanjay, there's been some significant developments on the alleged link between autism and childhood vaccines. What happened today?
There are three test cases out there, Wolf, that sort of a special court ruled on today, trying to establish whether or not there is a link between certain vaccines, childhood vaccines, the MMR vaccine in particular, and autism. This was a ruling that a lot of people are waiting for some time. The answer came back as no, no, no on all three of those test cases. No link was established.
All right, stop. No link was established. I can imagine why. Could it be the courts were set up by the pharmaceutical companies?
So is this decision final now?
Well, you know, the way it works in the vaccine court...
Vaccine?
Okay, now I have to stop it there because I think he starts saying naughty words. This is 4409. If you go to YouTube and just type in 4409 vaccine court, okay? 4409 is one of our videographers in Phoenix, and he posts a lot of stuff on freedomsphoenix.com. Freedoms with an S, phoenix.com. Now, 4409, he was watching television, and this is CNN. It's Wolf Blitzer. This was in early 2009, and this landmark autism ruling came down, and they're going, well, the vaccine court. And he's like, whoa. He's like, wait a minute. Where the heck did that come from? So he starts doing some research, and you find out the vaccine court was created by the pharmaceutical industry. You know, because they say, look, man, if you want us doing vaccines, you want us doing, hey, we're not going to be able to do this, you know, because we love y'all, unless you give us limited liability, unless we're held harmless, unless that we get to go through our own court, unless. I'm like, wow. And then once they got that, then how, of course they want to put 14 gazillion trillion different little vaccines, whatever, in every single shot, as much as they can pump into your kid for the benefit of somebody else. It has nothing to do. Do you think they give a crap about your kid? You know, so I'm just, wow. And then you have all of these neurological problems and so on. And it's like a shock to anybody. So, I mean, you got to tell me, you know, Mr. Marangal, you know, this has to be of concern to you.
Well, you know, what we find is that the protectionism of the government over pharmaceutical industry is on both sides of the fence, as we both know. And is usually tucked somewhere in a bill that's got to get through an appropriations bill or this or that, there, where there is either limited liability to the pharmaceutical industry for the manufacture of vaccines, or there's so many hoops and loops to jump through that even the vaccine adverse reaction reporting system called VARS is you almost have to hold a physician at gunpoint to get him to report an adverse reaction in your child. And I've known of a number of cases where the child's had an immediate or within 48-hour adverse reaction. They take the child back to the pediatrician. Oh, no, it couldn't be from the shot. It must be something else. They don't, unless the parent pushes the issue, they do not put it in their medical records. And they do not wind up being reported. And yet there's still over 100,000 reports a year of adverse reactions. We've just gotten great news from the WHO and not the guys who or the rock singers, but from the World Health Organization, that you can all rest assured that the H1N1 pandemic is now officially over.
Oh, like I trusted them it ever started.
And so, you know, this just came out this week. Gee, the pandemic was over. Well, it never got here. It never got to Australia. It never got really anywhere. We destroyed over a million doses of the vaccination last year because a lot of people, and many people, including healthcare professionals, refused to take it. And so the recommendations, and here's how the insidious movement forward and toward mandatory vaccination comes. First of all, people that participate and take advantage of federally funded daycares, their children must be vaccinated if they're going to take federal money to have their child in daycare. We're seeing that trend move toward people that are on Medicaid. We're going to see it move toward people that are on Medicare, that there will be mandated procedures that must be done if you're going to use government money to pay for your
health care. Well, now we have national health care.
And so,
you know, so, I mean, what kind of mandates are we going to have with that? And then we have education. You know, the school system require all kinds of stuff. My children went to private school and they still had some requirements, you know. So I'm concerned. You know, this is, and what is my, I get to test what the child, we went through this when they did the H1N1 scare in Phoenix. And one of the activists there is a nurse, and he goes, all right, well, I know the documentation that they have to put with the vials that they have there. They have a nice little case of the virus that they're going to be giving people. They have some doctor sitting there getting paid his, you know, $10 a shot or something, you know. They pay your $25 at Walgreens. So you go in there, and then what happens? He sits down, he says, okay, well, let me see your information sheet. There's an information sheet? We didn't know that. You know, they don't want to show you this stuff. You're not allowed to be informed. Exactly. You're just required. You're just required. So now you're saying that any federal subsidized program at all of anything is going to come with the strings that you must allow us to put this substance inside your flesh.
It's, I mean, that's the case if someone volunteers for the military. They have... you know, once you give your body over to the military, you are you're subject to all the shots, vaccines, this, that, and the other thing that they're going to give you.
Yeah, GI, government issue.
Yeah, there you go. And so, but the disturbing thing that I'm seeing is this slow trend. It's almost like when you're boiling the frog. You know, you start him out in cold water, and he doesn't know he's boiled until it's done. This year, the CDC is recommending the flu vaccine to everyone. It used to be exempt groups, children under, you know, 2 years
pregnant
of age,
women,
pregnant women,
old,
this, that, the other thing. The new rule of thumb, as I'm looking at it right now, is for the first time, the seasonal flu vaccine is recommended for all men, women, including pregnant women and children over age 6 months. So that is the entire population. Now, that's a change in the recommendation.
Yeah, they got a stockpile you need to get rid of.
Now, next year, it won't be a recommendation for a lot of people. It may be mandatory. My son, who would not have the meningitis vaccine, went to school in the People's Republic of New York, where they are very forceful about their vaccine enforcement. And when we pushed his university and said, look, it's a deal buster if he has to have this vaccine, they said, here's the exemption form. Sign it. Okay, if there's a meningitis outbreak, he has to leave the campus. Okay, fine. He didn't like the weather in Buffalo and transferred to ASU, which is in sunny Phoenix, Tempe. And when we got there, they said, well, you have to have an MMR vaccine to come into ASU. So he went down to the campus, went to the health center, ran around, finally found a doctor and said, do you have an exemption form for MMR? Oh, yeah, we have it. And they said, well, you know, what is it? Well, if we have measles outbreak on campus, your son would have to leave campus. He'd miss classes, and we wouldn't reimburse you for anything you paid for. We said, okay, we'll roll the dice on that one. We signed the thing. I said, why MMR? Why is that the only one required in the state of Arizona to go to your state universities? They said, well, we had a visiting professor from Africa, and he had measles when he came here, and exposed about 1,600 of her students in his classes and so forth. And no one got the measles. The man resolved the measles. And but the state legislature said everybody's got to get an MMR now just in case. And so there is, if push comes to shove, there is always a loophole because the state is not willing
to
mandate and to lose money. But that may not be the case in Texas with the HPV vaccination for girls.
Yeah, that was another. We'll get into that when we get back. This I have to understand, what's the motivation? Is it health? Are there some statistics that back that up? In fact, there are statistics that are exact opposite. It causes more problems than it solves. So what is the motivation for a legislator to require it?
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Seen in particular, and autism. This was a ruling that a lot of people are waiting for some time. The answer came back as no, no, no on all three of those test cases. No link was established.
All right, stop. No link was established. I can imagine why. Could it be the courts were set up by the pharmaceutical companies?
So is this decision final then?
Well, you know, the way it works with the vaccine court.
Vaccine court? What the hell is vaccine court?
Is you can appeal, just like any other court. You can appeal to a federal claims court, for example.
Like the court you should have went into at first, instead of going to some jicky-jack made-up court called vaccine court?
They may hear this case, but the vaccine court has been handing down decisions for over 20 years now, and they've given money in the past. Over 1,500 cases, they've given money. But these three cases, they simply thought an award was not justified.
I don't really hear much about this vaccine court. I've never heard about it, but it's out there, I see.
You know, what's so interesting about this is when vaccine makers started coming to this country and so many lawsuits were being waged against them.
Stop. Shouldn't that make you question if you're getting this many lawsuits that something is wrong? They said, okay. Well,
yeah, no, there's something wrong. And this is something that we were paying attention to when we found out vaccine court, and we have the pharmaceutical industry policing themselves. And it's not even that. They get to judge themselves. I'm going, wow, wow, wow. So we started paying more attention. This was in February, beginning of 2009, and then here came the H1N1 thing. And now I remember the World Health Organization, Dr. Day, came out and they said, we're at level 6. I didn't think they even had a level 6. They made up a level 6. And then all of a sudden, Obama, national emergency. Then the governor's national emergency because they wanted to be able to mandate injecting the government coming up and putting stuff in my flesh. So I'm going, no, we came out heavy against this in Arizona. We finally kind of pushed that back, as did a lot of people around the country. But now you're fearful that they're going to try and do it anyway.
Well, the fact is, it's taken an entire year for the World Health Organization to actually reveal all the people that suggested moving from DEFCON 4 to DEFCON 6 or whatever they would call it. And it turns out that 5 of the researchers and people that were involved have financial ties to multiple pharmaceutical companies, especially Novartis and the ones who were manufacturers of the H1N1 vaccine. So the double-edged sword to that is that if there really ever is a true life-threatening pandemic, we can no longer trust the World Health Organization, if we ever did, or their scientists, because they're all tainted one way or the other. If there is not a collusion, there at least is the appearance of impropriety, at the very least.
Or incompetence.
And so, you know, what I would say in closing to your listeners is that it's important that you make informed decisions and seek out sources that have high-quality information that's factual. I suggest the National Vaccine Information Center, NVIC.org, and also Dr. Meir Eisenstein, who, this is a well-credentialed gentleman. He's an MD, he's a JD, and he's got a master's in public health. Exactly what the opposition doesn't really like when you have someone who is sophisticated and well-trained and is coming out on the opposite side of...
Well, go ahead and give out the how to get hold of him again. Because they're the first ones they're going to go after.
Yeah, well, I'm sure he's made the whatever list he's supposed to be on, too. Mm-hmm. But it's Mayer, M-A-Y-E-R, Eisenstein, M-D. And, just Google him up and start looking for information and make informed decisions and realize that if somebody's herding you in one direction, it's a lot better to be a goat than a sheep.
Thanks. Well, we're going to be coming back with George. You know, George, let's go ahead and get George in over here. George Shepherd is the publisher of, thank you very much, Doctor. That was informative. And, George, we were going to have him on here earlier, but he's popular. So he was in there doing thing. George Shepherd is the publisher of Republic Magazine. And he works with Gary Franchi a great deal, realityreport.tv, and the promotion of Restore the Republic. And I wanted to make sure that you schooled me, and I got my pen and paper right here, right now. I kept getting called out doing stuff when you're giving your presentation. And it was very interesting on how you're using social networking in order to get the freedom message out. And I wanted you to go ahead and walk us through some of the highlights of that so that all the people in the audience that are right now getting pen and paper, okay, that they can start learning how you can associate with people all over the internet for next to nothing and become a powerhouse of freedom. Well, go ahead and, George, anything you want to add to your introduction on that? I mean, who you is? Other than that, you're a drummer?
I'm a drummer.
Yeah, well, why was that? Everybody's going to call you drummer. You go, yeah, I want to be known as a drummer, man. That's very cool.
Well, that's how I started out, basically. It doesn't take a whole lot to have passion for something and make things happen. And one of the things that I've learned through the process of starting the magazine was it doesn't take much to do and affect a lot of people in general. And I've told the people a lot of this. I started that magazine on a $19 email account. And it was just a system that I learned about. I put this thing together. I taught someone how to use it. I made a connection with Aaron Russo and his organization. And we ended up launching this really high-quality magazine that I think has turned a lot of people onto the movement and the message.
Well, go ahead and tell a little about the magazine. I remember when it first started coming out, it had a lot of information that a lot of people just didn't really get and, didn't understand that these things were happening. And you put it in a magazine format in such a way that activists could actually distribute it to people they thought would be interested. And then all of a sudden it just started, growing in not just like subscriptions one at a time, which I'm sure that happened too, but people were subscribing to give me 100 at a time so I can give it to my friends. And that's really what launched the Republic. Because I remember people ordering them by the hundreds for us at the Freedom's Phoenix Workshop. Here I'm going, all right, well, I guess we got another stack we got to give out, So we did that, and you had some issues were more popular than others, but it was so you actually sometimes get such demand for some, you'll go back and reprint it.
Well, our whole business model was based around activism. We didn't actually start taking subscribers, like single copy subscribers, until our third issue, because it just wasn't necessary. We started out saying, if you want magazines, order them in bulk of 25, 50, 100, pass them out to people, get involved. And it just took off like wildfire. And we have actually, like you mentioned, we produced our issue number 5, which was about the tax, the illegal income tax. We produced that twice. We did over 50,000 copies of that magazine.
Well, tell me about, I just found out, here recently that you guys have started getting newsstand coverage.
Mm-hmm.
How'd that come about? How's that working?
That was interesting, actually. We talk a lot about people in the movement not working together. And some people know of a newspaper out there called The Sovereign. And we connect with a lot of folks. And the publisher of The Sovereign called me up. He said, hey, I really like your magazine. We just started talking to this distributor that's willing to take The Sovereign and put it out there. And here's a phone number. You might think that this would help you out. So we were actually led to that by that distributor, whereas the same people that are covering the magazine now wouldn't even talk to us 2 or 3 years ago. This guy went out there and helped us out. So it's really by helping each other and finding holes in what we're doing that we can really grow together as a unit.
Well, no, tell me about it. You're getting on Borders.
You want to know where it's at?
Yeah.
Barnes & Noble, Books A Million. We started out with 900 copies, and this is, I think, our fifth month of being on the newsstand. We're up to nearly 5,000 copies a month. at this point. So the major bookstores, if you don't see it, you can always go there and request it. You know, we're the same distributors distribute everything. So there might be 4 or 5 copies in this store. There might be 10 copies in this other store. It's all about demand. And as long as there's demand for the magazine, then they're going to keep ordering them, and they're just going to keep ordering them in stacks.
How is the demand?
Well, so far for first publication, well, for the first year of us being on the newsstand, I think it's great. You know, so 5,000 copies a month is, to me, that's great.
Yeah, it's better than none. I'll tell you that.
Stick in the eye.
You know, so let's go ahead and talk about some of the social networking that you were mm-hmm. talking about. Give me some of your favorites.
Well, obviously the ones that everyone knows about, you know, Twitter and Facebook. And
why Twitter?
Like that.
Why? What is so great about Twitter? Why Twitter? I got a Twitter thing. I don't use Twitter.
It's quick. And the reason why, there's a character limit. I can't remember what the character limit is, like 100 and something characters or less than 60 characters.
Yeah, 140 or something like that.
It's really short. So you have to really boil down your message into quick sound bites almost, but they're, you know, read. And to me personally, I think that the reason why Twitter's caught on so much is it's voyeurism. You know, people think of voyeurism as kind of like a negative, dirty thing. That's really what it is. It's stepping outside of your life. When you go see a movie, why do people connect with movies? Because they step outside of their life, they suspend their disbelief, and they become someone else. And by connecting with other people and what's going on in their life, I don't know. I mean, do we live that uninspired lives? Are we that bored with what we're doing ourselves? But that's why I think it's caught on itself.
Well, then we have, of course, Facebook. Now, you were talking about one aspect of where when you post things to your various different parts of your website, it'll simultaneously post mm-hmm. it to Facebook and Twitter.
Right.
Tell me everything.
Tell you everything. The email account that we started out
in
with.
30 seconds.
AWeber. AWeber.com is the website that will connect it all
okay,
together.
Okay, now before we go further, because they're going to cut this off, mm-hmm. go ahead and put that out so people can start pulling that up. AWeber. Tell me the website.
AWeber.com. AWeber.com.
AWeber.com. Go ahead and pull that up because we're all going to become activists extraordinaire when we come back here on Declare Your Independence of me, Ernest Hancock, and George Shepherd in just a little bit.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Yes, more than a feeling. There's some factual information that we're going to be sharing with you today. We got Gary Franchi. He's here hanging out. You know, I'm just... You know, I can't go anywhere without seeing Gary, George, Badnarik, Mac. I mean, we're all like bar flies at the same bars, you know? You know, we're at the Freedom Meat Market. You know, we're just looking for everybody. So what I'm going to do is I want to go ahead and finish with George here real quick and have him explain to us. You know, if I had a 1,000 people that went to my little bitty website, you know, a day. I did my little blog and I'm, you know, I got 1,000 people, Mom. Look, you know, I had 1,000 people. If I were to take your advice and try to expand that, what would one be the first thing that I would do that would be the most impactful? How impactful would it be? How much would it cost? And what would be the first 3 things that you would do?
First thing I would do is the website that I mentioned earlier, I would sign up for an AWeber account. Number one, that allow you to communicate
why?
With people.
Why?
Well, you need to develop a relationship with the folks that are coming to get information from you. Because, I mean, you don't trust everything you hear the first time you hear it, right? You need to hear things in order to develop trust with people. Say, yeah, this guy's got something that I'm interested in. I've checked it out, and I believe it. As opposed to all the crap that's on the internet, the stuff that's out there that's kind of really far out there. That's the first thing I would do is have the facility, the mechanism in order to communicate with people. Then you need to start developing that relationship. Most people don't know how to get people onto a list because no one wants to give out their email address. The key to that is to give them something that they're looking for. Give them what they want. It's called an ethical bribe. You're bribing them for their email address. You can communicate with them, but you're doing it ethically by saying, hey, I'll give you this if you want it. Cool. Let's talk. So you got to find something like a report or a special thing or a special video that they don't feel so bad about giving their email address away because that's a piece of privacy. Once you get that, you need to communicate with people. Most people will put people on an email newsletter, and then they'll never communicate with them for like 6 months. And what happens is when you do that, they lose interest, and you're not going to get through to them anyway. You need to immediately follow up 3 days later. Hey, did you like that clip? You got to write in the first person. You can't write these long emails that are like people talking about just stuff.
Okay, all right, let's go ahead and let's go to freedomsphoenix.com. You're familiar with the site,
mm-hmm.
okay?
Yep.
I don't feel like communicating with 30,000 people. I mean, you know, certainly on an individual basis. So I'm just like, so I'm going, all right, if I was to communicate with them other than sending them the newsletter that they want, I mean, they subscribe to it, and mm-hmm. I want to get the daily newsletter, you know, once, twice a day, depending on how much volume we have. And they go, but there's also an ability on there that people can send the newsletter to them, say, look, man, here, look at this, or mm-hmm. this is this one article or something. But when they reply to that, you know, they can reply back directly to me and say, hey, don't be sending me your spam, you freedom-oriented scumbags. I'm a good little statist, and don't send me your stuff, okay? I mean, you know, right. that can happen, and that does.
It does.
And it does on occasion. You'll go, you know, so, and I need that feedback to see if people are sending this out, you know, they're broadcasting it, you know, which is fine. I mean, that's kind of one of the points that we wanted to do. And what happens is, you know, you get, really, it's a lot lower than people would think. I would say I get complaints about people sending them stuff from the site maybe twice a week or something. I mean, it's really low,
right.
but it's not none. So mm-hmm. when they do it, fine. Okay. Boom. I put it as an invalid email in my system so that nobody could ever send it to them ever again. You're cut off of the information of the truth. Okay.
Mm-hmm. You do that manually.
I'm sorry.
You do that manually.
You're right. No, well, also we have an automated system that if somebody's on a list that it bounces more than three times in a certain period of time, it just automatically deletes them.
But if somebody sends you an email to take me off the list, you have to manually take them and put them onto a blacklist.
No, they have the option of just hitting unsubscribe. So they can unsubscribe if they want to, mm-hmm. but a lot of times they won't.
Most people don't.
Yeah, no, see, this is what happens. I can see what's going on. A lot of times it's a business, or more likely it's a newspaper or media, because this is how it works, and I'm sure you guys have the same experience. There'll be somebody in a small town of Oklahoma, De La, whatever, and they'll go through their local web page or their newspaper and send it to every single reporter, editor, and publisher of the media in there, because they're just so mad that their local media sucks so bad that they want to give them something like, you know, our websites. So they send that to them. Well, then there's some reporter that kind of, he's scared for his job, or he doesn't, I never asked for this. Please take me off. I can't believe that you would say. And then I go look at how long they've been subscribed, and it's been 8 months. And I'm going, right, you know, so I can see where this is going, you know. So I just kind of let it go, absolutely taken care of, and I don't make a big deal out of it. But the thing is that we have people that can be able to send this kind of stuff. Let's say that's a perfect example. Mm-hmm. During the Ron Paul Revolution days, there were people that were just taking Freedom's Phoenix and a lot of what you were doing, Restore the Republic, and they were sending that to all of these different groups and media everywhere that Ron Paul would go, every time they'd have an event, every time there was a primary. They're flooding the media with all this stuff, and they were freaking coughing up blood, man. They're like, oh, stop, make it stop. So this is the experience that we have. How do they do that using AWeber and then maintain a clean list, or how do you benefit from that? How use that as an example.
Okay, if I was going to start over today, how about if I do that?
Let's do that.
So that gives people that are on here right now that want to get active, they can just use this as their plan, their action plan. Go to AWeber, get yourself an account. It's cheap. Put together something that people want, a special report. It could be even a here's a good option. We give Republic Magazine away for free. You can go to the website and you can download one of the digital copies, put up a website about sustainable development, or, I mean, you pick it. It's anything you can possibly think of people are looking for. And you go out there and you promote it in the blogs or the forums. You post things out there. Get people to come to that website. Offer them a free copy of this magazine for signing up on your list. Maybe you create your own report, or you create a special video, or you create, here's a great one, a directory of everything you can find on that one subject. Get the total package, the total understanding of this one thing. And you put together a directory of these things that are on the internet. It would take you years sometimes to find all this stuff, but you can find it in one place. That's good enough for me to give you my name and email if I want to learn. Then you start communicating with them. Tell them more about these things. One of the things, Ernie, that's real important is think about our military. We've got four branches, right? And there's segments. There's different jobs for each of those people. You should also segment the list, the people that you just respond to. Some people are into this particular subject. Some people are in the tax subject. Some people are into Second Amendment issues. If you segment those people down to say, I'm going to send you information that you're interested in, But I'm going to pepper the stuff that you're interested in with some of this other stuff that you might not know about. But I'm not going to make it like the forefront. More than likely, they're going to stay on your list. They're going to be more responsive to your list. So when you say jump, they say how high, as opposed to saying, oh, I got to jump again.
Well, see, this is I remember that is how you guys developed Restore the Republic. You know, and this is, you know, Gary, you go ahead and jump in on this, because I remember you had this enormous database that was, you know, generated from the movie America from Freedom and Fascism with Aaron Russo. And you had to go through and say, OK, we got a lot of emails here, but we got to make sure which ones are good. How are we going to make use of these? How did you do that?
Well, what happened was, you know, Russo had amassed about 50 or 60,000 emails from that film. And while he was still with us, we said, look, we got to clean this list. There was people that wanted, you know, they could not opt out of the list. It was just not set up that way. So we got an AWeber account at George's Discovery, and we imported all those 60,000 emails. Well, only 6,000 people clicked the link to rejoin. Russo freaked out. He was ready to shut down shop and close up and, you know, go home. Well, I convinced them, said, no, we got to rebuild and let's keep going. And we've built the list back up to about 50,000 now. But the point was is that we had to take a chance, and we had to re-import that list and clean it out, because there was just people on that list that just either didn't want it or they had enough. So we started fresh.
Well, did you do it again to see how many people would come back? You know, I mean, did you hit them more than once?
No, it was a one-shot deal. We took 60,000 emails. We contacted AWeber, said, look, well, there's a form that you can go through. You can actually only import 2,000 a day. We told them this is time sensitive. Open up the floodgates. Let us do all 60,000 at once. Get this thing over with. They sent an email to each person saying, you must respond by clicking this link to stay on our email list. 6,000 people clicked, and those emails were retained, and we started from that.
So what did you do with the other emails? Just dumped them?
They're in a database.
You know what? You don't want them. If they don't want to respond, you don't want them.
And why would
respond
we
to what? I mean, what was the response you were requesting from them?
Do you want to continue receiving emails about freedom to fascism? Yes or no? Click here. 6,000 people said yes. The rest said no. We took those others that said no. We said, we're not going to bother you anymore.
You know, well, our model is a little bit different in that how they get on our list is they request it anyway. I mean, from the beginning, you know, we want to get the newsletter kind of thing. So how would I use these services with, you know, what I have, the database that I've accumulated?
Well, in my opinion, because you already have an existing database, just like Russo had an existing database. Mm-hmm. We had to take that database and import it and take a chance to figure out how many people would re-opt in. In your case, that's a chance you'd have to take. Do you take all those emails, dump them in AWeber, and hope that you get a good percentage of return? That's all you can really do.
Well, they can unsubscribe anytime they want.
Yeah, but well, that's right. The way that everyone thinks. I mean, the thing is this. If they're not going to be reacting to what you're saying, and they're not going to really be even opening your emails, and you don't even know sometimes if your deliverability is even happening, then you need to be communicating with the people that do want to know, that are ready to get out.
You know, that's something that I'd like to talk to you about, is the how you can tell if they're opening it, mm-hmm. You know. Because a lot of times we'll have a lot of people, we send out a lot of the email dispatches at their request. Okay, cool. Then what? I mean, you know, are they looking? Do we care? You know, I like to think that they're, you know, we have an enormous return in traffic on the site from the email dispatch. So I'm wondering, you know, all of these things that you guys have learned, because I know you really know a lot more about this than I do, because we're so focused on other aspects, the content and the serviceability of the list and use as activists using the site, as opposed to communicating with the people that read the site. So it's more of an activist tool than it is a reader tool, and it's just a different focus. I want to see how I can benefit.